Hi, and welcome back to Legends of Surgery. I'm your host, Tyler Rouse. As promised, this episode is in honor of April Fool's Day. And in that spirit, today we're going to talk about imposters. Specifically one imposter, but possibly the greatest one of all time. This is the story of Fred DeMera. Now, as most people that follow the news know, people posing as surgeons is not that uncommon. Usually it's someone with medical training, pretending to have credentials that they don't really have to perform procedures that they aren't trained to do. This frequently seems to be in the world of private cosmetic surgery, as it is often done outside of a hospital. Occasionally you hear about a layperson pretending to be a doctor, but rarely attempting any type of procedure. It is the rare and bold fraud that will attempt surgery with little to no training. But to fake being a ship surgeon, in a military, during wartime, and perform trauma surgery successfully, that makes you the king of the imposters. Okay, let's start at the beginning. Ferdinand Waldo DeMera Jr. was born December 21, 1921, in Lawrence, Massachusetts, to a well-off, upper-class family. Unfortunately for them and his family, the Depression hit, wiping out the family's finances and forcing them to move to a poor neighborhood. Ferdinand, or Fred as he was then known, ran away from home at the age of 16 and joined the Cistercian monks, an order of meditative farm workers at Valley Falls, Rhode Island. Within a year, the abbot of the monastery convinced him to become a teacher, and he joined the Brothers of Charity. He stayed with them a while before joining the U.S. Army in 1941. This is where the hoaxes began. He went AWOL, stole his army buddy's identity, re-enlisted with the Navy, had some medical exposure there going to the hospital school at Norfolk, and was assigned a medical corpsman, failed to achieve the rank of officer despite forging a college transcript and letter of recommendation, left the Navy and joined another monastery of Trappist monks under the name Robert L. French, claiming a PhD in psychology from Stanford. French was a real person that he found in a college catalog. DeMera then joined an order of Catholic teachers, studying at DePaul University and doing quite well. Okay, stay with me, there's more. He then left and found a job teaching psychology at Gannon College, went to LA and worked in a sanatorium, then took another teaching job in a college in Washington State. This is where the FBI caught him, and he spent 18 months in jail under desertion charges from the Army. Upon getting out, DeMera quickly went back to his old tricks, assuming the identity of Cecil Hammond, a biologist. Using this name, he studied law at night at Northeastern University in Boston and worked as an orderly during the day at Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary. Now hold on, we're getting there, don't worry. After a year, DeMera gave up law and joined the Seminary of the Brothers of Christian Instruction, a French teaching order at Alfred, Maine. They were glad to take a man with such academic credentials, and DeMera took up the name Brother John. The order was connected to the French-Canadian community, and Brother John was sent to Grand Falls, New Brunswick in Canada to study theology. This is where he met his most important mark, Dr. Joseph C. Sear. Dr. Sear was a general practitioner in the town and a recent grad, and the two of them hit it off and spent a lot of time together. DeMera got Sear's credentials by telling them that he would take them back to Maine and present them to the medical board there so that Sear could obtain a license to practice in the U.S. But instead of doing that, DeMera doubled back to New Brunswick and walked into a recruiting office of the Royal Canadian Navy. It was early March of 1951, and Canada was in the midst of a war in Korea. DeMera had been quoted as saying to the recruiters, quote, "I am Dr. Joseph Sear of this province, and I feel it is my duty, now that we are again at war, to volunteer my services where they can be of most help," end quote. Desperate for trained medical officers, the Navy asked few questions and cut as much red tape as possible to get him signed up. DeMera was immediately sent to Ottawa to be presented the next afternoon to the Medical Officer Selection Board. On March 19th, Dr. Sear, quotations, was assigned to the Royal Canadian Navy Hospital in Halifax, Nova Scotia. He stayed there for 2 months, faking his way through it in a rather genius way. He convinced his superior to put together a basic medical handbook, ostensibly for use in lumber camps and other remote locales without medical care, which he used himself. Along with some luck, the use of at least 6 or 7 physician colleagues for curbside consults and vast doses of penicillin, he faked his way through. By May, he was assigned to the HMCS Magnificent aircraft carrier. This time, he was under the direct supervision of a single command medical officer, and he did not impress. Quote, "lacked training in medicine and surgery, especially in diagnosis," end quote, was the assessment, and DeMera wound up hiding his sicker patients in the bowels of the ship as a quarantine to avoid his superior. During all this time, DeMera was furiously studying every medical text he could get his hands on, and as we'll see, he would need all the help he could get. In August, Dr. Sear was ordered to report to naval headquarters in Esquimalt, B.C., and was assigned to the Cayuga, a destroyer. Damara was going to war, and he would be the only medical officer on a ship with 12 officers and 280 enlisted men. He was immediately confronted by the captain, Commander Plover, who had an infected tooth and a demand that his new medical officer pull it. Now, Damara had never done this, nor even read about it. After a lot of stalling and desperately trying to find something in his books to guide him, he shot the commander up with Novocaine and went for it. Two teeth easily came out, and he had won the confidence of his commander and crew. While patrolling the Korean coast in September, in a terrible storm, a boatload of wounded South Korean soldiers pulled up next to the Cayuga. There were 19 casualties, three of them serious. Damara tried to use the storm as an excuse, but was forced to act. After taking care of the minor traumas, along with his capable sick berth attendant, P.O. Bob Hotchin, Damara took over the commander's quarters and created a makeshift operating theater. The doctor sterilized his equipment, much of which he'd never used, and prepared his patient with a combination of morphine, injections of sodium pentothal, and an old open-drip ether system, which we used a cone over the patient's face. The patient had been hit with a bullet in the chest, so Damara made an incision in the chest, removed part of a rib, and using rib spreaders, exposed the pericardial sac, something he'd never even seen before, let alone attempted. He then drew out the blood and identified the bullet fragment. Unsure of what to do, Damara made a split decision and pulled the bullet out. Amazingly, the patient remained stable, so he stuffed gel foam into the wound and closed as best he could. The patient was eating broth 2 hours later and walked off the ship the next day. The next two patients were less severely wounded, but still, given that he was not even a novice, it is amazing that he could deal with them. One had a bad groin wound from a shell, which he cleaned up and closed, and the other a collapsed lung from a rib fracture, which he also dealt with, but the details are not as clear on how exactly. I don't think he inserted a chest tube. The amazing thing is that, rather than quit while he was ahead, this gave Damara the confidence to go further. He went ashore on some of the Korean islands and started to care not only for casualties but the civilians, setting up clinics, performing surgeries including amputations, and even setting up a sanitation system. His hubris, however, would be his downfall. Damara claimed that he even did a lung resection based on a description he found in The Lancet, based on an operation done on King George of England. Now, in this fact, I'm going to call into question. So King George VI actually had surgery on September 23rd of 1951, where his left lung was removed by Clement Price Thomas, who himself was actually a famous surgeon, due to a malignant tumor. Now, Damara was actually arrested and transferred off of the ship, and we'll get to that in a minute, on October 26th of the same year. So I find it very unlikely that Dr. Thomas himself wrote up the description of his operation and published it, and it was arriving in Korea in less than 1 month. Anyways, let's keep going. It was actually due to this bold claim of surgery as well as his work on the islands that attracted military journalists who fell in love with the, quote, selfless missionary that worked on our Korean allies, end quote. The story got picked up by the press in Canada, and the real Dr. Sear's mother read about it and called her son. Dr. Sear himself saw the article and realized it was not a picture of himself, and the lie quickly unraveled. The Canadian Navy immediately called for his removal from active duty. However, his own captain couldn't believe it, and it took some convincing that this capable and well-loved doctor had fooled them all. In fact, the officers of the Cayuga sent him a Christmas card that year that read, quote, "He may be 6 kinds of a liar, he may be 10 kinds of a fool, he may have faults that are dire, and seem without reason or rule. But we don't analyze, we just love him because, well, because he's our friend," end quote. Damara was eventually taken back to Canada to appear before a naval board of inquiry, but no record of disciplinary proceedings or service records indicate that Sear was punished. And when I say Sear, I mean Damara. In fact, he was given an honorable discharge, his back pay, and a request that he never return to Canada. He did at least once, though, as it is rumored that Damara attended the 1979 reunion of the crew of the Cayuga in Victoria, BC. Damara sold his story to Life magazine, a source for this podcast in a fantastic read, which is available online, and achieved some fame, appearing on the TV show You Bet Your Life. A book was written on his escapades called The Great Imposter by Robert Crichton, which, although is out of print, I was able to find in a library archive, and it's actually available online as well, and this served as a primary source of material. A movie by the same name starring Tony Curtis came out in 1961. Now that I couldn't get my hands on. There are even songs about him by Fleetwood Mac and the band. So Demare continued to bounce around, working odd jobs and trying to take on aliases, which was harder now that he was famous. His final work was as a visiting chaplain at the Good Samaritan Hospital of Orange County in Anaheim, California. He died at the age of 60 on June 7, 1982, having lived a most unusual life and having pulled off one of the greatest hoaxes in history. That wraps up another episode of Legends of Surgery, and I hope you enjoyed it. Before I leave you, I wanted to note that in my research for this podcast, I came across another imposter in the person of Margaret Ann Bulkley, aka James Barry. This too is a story of a pretender, but of a very different sort, and in a very different place and time, which deserves its own telling in a podcast for another day. And speaking of other podcasts, next week marks the start of the baseball season, so I thought I'd take on a surgical procedure that is so common in baseball players that it's actually named after one of them and not a surgeon. Tune in next week to find out more. Please rate the podcast on iTunes and leave a comment there or follow me on Twitter at Surgery Legends. Like us on Facebook at Legends of Surgery or send an email to legendsofsurgery@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you about your thoughts on the podcast or ideas for future episodes. And as always, thanks for listening.